Happy Saturday, folks. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. You know, I think I have an interesting show for you today. We've been talking about some big macroeconomic pictures, macro international pictures. But in this last week, I did kind of a mini book tour. Went down to Oklahoma. Signed to Tinker Air Force Base. We signed a lot of military installations. I really like it. And, of course, the publishers are great. I long ago talked them into, and they've stayed the course on sending literally thousands of books overseas to troops. And I signed some Barnes & Nobles down in Oklahoma City, too. First time I've ever been in Oklahoma City, actually. And, you know, when you do these kind of events, you meet lots of people. Big ones, little ones, black folks, white folks, Hispanic folks, Oriental folks, men, women, young, old. I mean, it's pretty amazing cross-section of who you run into at a book signing. And who you converse with, many times in far more sentences than, would you like to buy this book? And what struck me this week is how my interactions with everyday folks, both in the military and outside the military, kind of reflect what I've been talking about in the macroeconomic sense. So follow me on this. You know, real wages have been dropping for about the last 20 years. They're actually, if you did it in today's dollars, so that it was even Steven, just 20 years ago, they would have been $163,000 income per person. It has now dropped to $54,000 per person, today's dollars. The velocity of money, that is, you spend it at a restaurant, let's say, and that restaurant pays its employees, and the employees go out and buy goods and services. And of course, the store that they buy the goods and services at pays its employees. And maybe throws in some of its own cash. That is the velocity of money. That's what happens to a dollar, you know, which is actually used to be 16, a little over 16 times. If you spend a dollar, you could pretty much count on a multiplier of 16x. That dollar would be spent 15 more times, 16 times it would roll over. Well, monetary velocity has been falling for 20 years also. And that means that folks really aren't spending money. And you know, if they don't spend money, we can't have a really good recovery. And perhaps they're not spending money because, if you listen to my show the week before last, there is a huge disparity, if you will, between the very wealthy and the filthy wealthy. Big difference. But we'll come back to all this because it's pretty fascinating the way it ties in at the lowest level of boots on the ground to macroeconomics. Today, overview. We're going to be talking about this quirk, this anomaly, this substantiation of a number of economic theories that I witnessed this week at Tinker Air Force Base and the Barnes & Nobles down there in Oklahoma City. And we're going to be talking about, because I promised you that we would, and it'll definitely cross your eyes, curl your hair, and make steam come out of your blue lips. and that is the mollycoddling, the assistance, the careful preservation of the leaders of the Taliban Five. Remember those guys that were released a year ago and are now all headed back to the battlefield? Yeah, whatever. All right, I digress. So that type of bell, you know, that type of, should we say, equipment of these people that can be converted to other uses, we'll get into also. Although, we're a natural disaster. Forget a man-caused disaster, as the White House likes to term it. You know, we all have gut feelings, right? We have red flags that, shall we say, kind of pennant around our souls that we feel in our gut. Do you have those? Are you acting on them? We're going to talk about that. All right. So the velocity of money. The velocity of money is when you spend a dollar, what that person does with that dollar, and then what the person who receives a portion of that dollar from the person you paid the dollar to does with that portion of that dollar, is the velocity of money. So I pay Betty Lou a dollar for an ice cream cone. And she pays 50 cents of it to her employees, and 30 cents of it to her suppliers, and 20 cents of it she puts in her pocket, just for, you know, an analogy, an example. And then her employee takes 30 cents of the 50 cents that they got, and they go out and buy food with it. And the supplier takes the 30 cents that they got, or the 20 cents, and they paid their employees, and so on and so forth. The velocity of money, folks, has been falling rapidly over the last 20 years, and particularly rapidly over the last 2 or 3 years. In fact, 5 years ago, the velocity of money was 2.2. It used to be, in the early 70s, as I was mentioning, 16. For every dollar that was spent, that dollar was circulated in one way, shape, or form 16 times through the economy. 5 years ago, it was 2.2 times. And with our friendly, competent, loving America, wanting to do what's best for the country and her people, president and his minions, that's now dropped to about 1.2, the lowest on record. That means dollars are not getting circulated. So what's happening to them? They're going into mattresses, savings accounts. Who knows really where these dollars are going, but they're not flowing through the economy. And part of it might be linked to this precipitous fall in average income from $163,000 in 2015 dollars to a paltry $54,000, give or take, now. That's a huge drop. If you couple this dramatic slowdown in the velocity of money with this horrendous drop in personal income, or income per person in the United States, and then you add the last layer to it, which is all the dollars, even though they're not getting circulated, and basically this whole economy is built on credit. The explosion in debt to about $57 trillion. I talked about this 2 weeks ago. Is all credit. I can't emphasize that enough. It's all credit. Somebody has lent somebody else money. And the money is not circulating through the economy. And on top of that, folks are holding on to money or they're borrowing to live because of the fallen incomes. If you take those three things and you combine them, you don't have to be a mathematician. You don't have to be a economist laureate, a Nobel Peace Prize winning economist to realize that, you know, you're either at the dead end or you're fast approaching the brick wall. It is just the way it is. Water runs downhill. I'm just a simple guy. I'm a simple cowboy, rancher. But, you know, this is unsustainable. It's, in fact, we're past unsustainable. We're at, holy moly, inflate the life vest. Now, you take what's happening systemically in the economy, and I might add, it's happening in the economies of all, without exception, of the Western world. The European Union, same boat. The member countries of the European Union, France, which is really pathetic. Spain, Greece, Italy, Portugal, the pigs, as they're called. Even Germany, the powerhouse of Europe. All these rotten to the core, corrupt Western socialist democracies, if you want to call them that, are, boy, excuse me, folks, holy smokes, that was a pepper sneeze from a little snack I had before the show, excuse me, whew, that cleared my sinuses. All the Western world is in the same boat. America is actually in slightly better shape, but, you know, everything is relative. Now, if you couple that with the threat from ISIS, Al-Qaeda, you name it, a myriad of terrorist groups, the high likelihood that without Israeli military action, including the use of tactical nuclear weapons, which I think is imminent now, if you take all of that and you put it together, you really kind of have a witch's brew for catastrophe, do you not? And I don't mean to be a doomsayer. In fact, I am anything but a doomsayer. I am an eternal optimist. And I really do believe that in the end, we will come out of this with flying colors. It's just going to be ugly until we get to that point. It's going to mean a complete restructuring of this out-of-control government that we have. Hopefully it won't be too late. The EPA will not have grabbed all the water in the United States or control of all the water in the United States. They will have been stopped for the third time in 10 years by SCOTUS, the Supreme Court. You know, hopefully ISIS and Al-Qaeda will not be able to penetrate our rather paltry defenses. And, you know, we'll all live happily ever after, and the birds will chirp, and the sun will rise, and the moon will cast its silver glow over the land. But I wouldn't bet your life on it, or the lives of your family, or your pocketbook. One of the groups that spawned and supports ISIS and Al-Qaeda and other jihadi groups is the Muslim Brotherhood. I've talked about them in the past. They actually have paid staff members. We're paying them, folks, our tax money, to consult to the White House and the CIA and the FBI and blah, blah, blah. You know, boy, that's done a lot of good, huh? But this outfit is the granddaddy of the terrorist outfits. They're the outfit that kind of keeps things together. They are the cohesive center at the center, at the middle of the spokes of the wheel. And they have always been this way, and Obama has always loved them. If they don't want to love them, you know, if they can't love them, then you want to leave them. The bottom line is, the Muslim Brotherhood, let me give you some, I won't call them fun facts, but eye-opening facts. We talked a little bit about this the week before last. And by the way, I got a lot of great comments on the rerun of the July 4th, 2014 show last week because I was on this road trip. But the Muslim Brotherhood, just in the last few days, well, the last 2 weeks, I mean, what's a few weeks when it comes to terror, right? The Muslim Brotherhood has called for increase in violence. They want, I quote, a long, uncomprising jihad, unquote. They have said that revolutionary punishment will be administered to all who stay in the Mideast. You know, bottom line is, if you're Anglo-Saxon, American, etc., your butt is now on the line by these groups. The Muslim Brotherhood published an official statement. This is about 3 weeks ago. And by the way, it was shortly after meeting with the State Department. You know, you couldn't make this up, could you? Really, you couldn't make this up. Justifying the, quote, killing of politicians, judges, security officials, and media personnel. Holy moly. The leopard shows its spots. It's the frog and the scorpion. Those of you who have been listening to my show for years, I've told that story several times. I'm sure I will tell it in the future, but this is not yet the future. In the last month or so, just to give you a feel for Muslim Brotherhood rhetoric. Here's their actions. On April 25th, four individuals, members of the Muslim Brotherhood, killed themselves in Beni Souef, which is, shall we say, kind of in the heart of the action over there between Iraq, Syria, Iran. They were making bombs. That's how they killed themselves. Too bad, so sad. On May 10th, two Muslim Brotherhood members were killed carrying IEDs, you know, roadside explosives, on a motorcycle that went off prematurely in Fayoum. One of the son was a son of a Muslim Brotherhood leader. So, they have the whole family in the act, I guess, those Muslim Brotherhood boys. Two Muslim Brotherhood neighbors were killed, or members, excuse me, were killed in a firefight with police at a hideout in Helwan. They, by the way, were suspects in an attack on a judge's home just a few days before. On May 19th, one day later, a Muslim Brotherhood member was wounded as he was building bombs in his apartment in a Cairo suburb. A lot of the instability that the Muslim Brotherhood is trying to sow is they're trying to kind of retopple the Egyptian government, who's supposed to be our ally. Of course, with Obama, you don't know if you're an ally or a friend. I think you're a friend if you donate a lot of money and vote Democratic, and otherwise, it's either who cares or he doesn't like you. On May 20th, this is all in the space of a few days, a Muslim Brotherhood member who was the main suspect in the killing of a Homeland Security colonel in April was killed in a confrontation with the police also near Cairo. On May 26, police arresting Muslim Brotherhood members in Giza discovered a workshop where various weapons were being manufactured. Look, these guys are serious. The White House is mollycoddling them. There's now been a secret memo. I'm trying to get my hands on it for you so I can post it. A secret memo within the White House about how support for the Muslim Brotherhood was mandated. I mean, where does this come from? Who does he want to win and who does he want to lose? This actually is becoming a very easy question to answer. So I took a long digression there. But I think that kind of gives you a feel for the dangers of the Muslim Brotherhood, ISIS, etc. This brings me kind of right back to the beginning of this show. So in my travels this week, I got to meet with a lot of military personnel, both in meetings for one thing or another, and at book signings. And you know, I was struck kind of by a sense of, I was struck by a sense of anger, trepidation. Our military knows it's being muzzled. It knows that it's, in a way, being set up, that it's being dismantled, that our vets aren't being taken care of. In fact, I don't know if you know this or not, but vet pensions were just cut 20%. Say what? These men and women gave their lives, gave years, gave decades in some cases to defense of this country, to the service to American people and to freedom. And unilaterally, the promise to them is broken by 20%. What is this? Who does this to anybody? Never mind it's military. Never mind in a time like this. The people in the White House, I must tell you, the Democratic Party, most of it, the people in the White House, Hillary Clinton and her foundations and her corruption and the bribes of her by foreign governments and the hiding of her emails illegal, the servers illegal, that were hacked by Russia and China, and who knows how many lives that has cost already and may cost us in the future. Or worse. These are acts of treason. I've been beating this drum for a year, folks. These people took an oath before God and on the Constitution to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. They have breached that oath intentionally, purposefully, with malice aforethought, time and time and time again. And they are accelerating the pace of the breaches. In Obama's case for ideology and in Hillary's case for money. I don't know which is worse. So in meeting with all these military personnel, great, great folks, men and women, talking to them about the books, selling them books, talking to them about things in general. And, you know, there's a limit to what they can say. But I can read facial features. I can read the shift in, eyes. I can read pursed lips. In a few cases, I could read the quiver in a cheek and a tear. These men and women are pissed off. And they're anxious. And they're upset. And they're kind of bewildered. And I saw that reflected in my book sales. You know, we do a lot of military signings. I love military signings. And we do unbelievable deals for the military at these signings. I'm not even going to tell you what the deals are, because those of you who buy these books retail or through Amazon or through a slight discount through the .coms, you'll be upset. But we do a great deal for the military. There's no profit in the books. And the publishers and I have sent thousands of books overseas at no cost or even out of pocket. I mean, what better group to be reading the story of America set in the West, the story of us, right? Anyway, our military is concerned, very concerned. I can see it in all their facial features. I can hear it in their voice, even though, like good military personnel, they say nothing, even though I try and elicit a response. And it's reflected in the fact that although there's great book sales, it's less than it was before, and fewer sales of all three books, or even just books one and two. Many more sales of just book one. And you know what? I see that same thing in signing for the general public. I had the treat of signing at the Oklahoma City Barnes & Noble for 2 days. Great bunch of people, great staff, terrific manager and CRM. I mean, really wonderful. As are virtually all the stores that we sign in. This is my very first time there. And I mean, the signing was gangbusters. They were in shock at how many books sold. One of them told me, I set a new store record. And they've had some pretty big names there, way bigger than this pipsqueak author. But you know what I noticed? Generally, in a book signing, I'll share some numbers with you. About 50%, give or take, of the books that are sold are book one. People are starting the series. They don't know me from Adam. They want to see if they like it, and they just buy book one. Makes sense. And about, 30%, 35% are book two, because some people are buying book two because they already have book one. Some people are buying book one and two to start the series. And about 15, 20% of the sales are all three books. Threads West, Maps of Fate, and Uncompahgre. Well, the signing this week was very unusual. The sales were gangbusters. I mean, literally, I had to lend Barnes & Noble books. And they were stocked up with hundreds when I walked in the door. But it was a huge preponderance of book one. We're talking like, I'm giving you a rough number, 80%, 75% of the sales were just book one. 25% of the sales were books two and three. And of course, you know, it's just, part of it's the same reason. They want to see if they like the series. But part of it is, people are not spending money because they're nervous. Whether they're in the military or they're in the civilian population, And granted, some of the people I met at Barnes & Noble were retired military. People have a foreboding. They are anxious and they're upset and they're angry. And by the way, the retired military people that I talked to did not mince any words about this. I won't even repeat what some of them said on this radio show. Suffice it to say that they are disgusted and angry, as well they have a right to be. So if you take all this stuff and you put it together and you mix it in with this horrible thing that happened down in Charlotte, you know, those poor 9 people that got killed, that grandmother and that state senator who had worked since he was 13 in that church by this punk white honky kid. You know, let's call a spade, man. This kid is a bad dude. Scum. He is every bit as bad as ISIS, if not worse. ISIS at least has the balls to tell you where they're coming from, even though the words won't be repeated by our president. Look, all these things are weighing on people's minds. And it is a huge weight. A huge weight. And people have a bad feeling. And I'll be honest with you, I've had a bad feeling for some time. And it's been growing stronger and stronger. I've said it on previous shows, but I am going to repeat it. We're in for a rough time, folks. We're in for a rough time economically. We're in for a rough time militarily. We're in for a rough time in terms of our personal safety and security right here in the homeland. And it's inevitable. And the next 16 months are the most dangerous 16 months in America's history to date because of this president. And the liars, the ideologues, the political animals that he has surrounded himself quite purposely with, and he has populated the departments and agencies of the country with, his shadow government. And if you don't think Putin doesn't know that this next 16 months might be his last window, and if Iran doesn't know that it's their last window, and if China doesn't know that it might be their last window for a while, or North Korea, or Venezuela, and if you don't think these people are going to take advantage of that, if you don't think they're going to take a bird in hand rather than two in the bush, even if they might have bribed Hillary or broken into her server, don't kid yourself. Human nature is human nature. It doesn't matter what color your skin is, what language you speak, what continent you live on, or what ideology drives you. Humans are humans. And if they have a goal and they see an opening, and they think that at some point that opening will close, they're going to seize the advantage. They're going to seize the day. Carpe diem. Which brings me to the last part of this show. I know some of you are sitting by the radio right now or your computer, whether you're listening on AM or you're listening on the podcast, and you're shaking your head in assent. You agree. You can feel that funny, hollow feeling in your gut that gnawing sense that something is wrong. And some of you may be sitting there going, man, Reed is finally, he's Looney Tunes, Fruit Loops, off the right wing nut. That can't happen here. Gee, what's on, what are we having for dinner tonight? What's on TV? When's the football game? Oh, boy. Look, folks, prepare yourselves. It will be up to us who remain strong, or in the worst cases, survive, to restore this country. And you owe that to yourself and to your family, of course, first and foremost, but secondarily and not far behind to your country. Give this some serious thought. Think about all these dark tentacles of evil blowing in a night, in a chilly night wind. As they would say in Star Wars, search your feelings, Luke. You know it to be true. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. We'll talk to you next Saturday.